One in four adults in the U.S. deals with a mental health disorder every year. And the National Alliance on Mental Health reports that more than half of them did not receive treatment within the past year. Telepsychiatry hopes to bridge that gap. It connects patients with psychiatrists directly using phone and video calls. Dale Peoples is an associate professor of child adolescent psychiatry at the Medical College of Georgia at Augusta University, and he joins us now to talk about how this virtual treatment works. Good morning, Dale.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to hear your voice. I mean, we're talking basically about Skype, right? Where you see people over videos, that type of technology?
More or less, that's it. We tend to use systems developed specifically for telemedicine to ensure patient privacy, as opposed to some of the more general, Skype
consumer
type programs.
And there are other things that are available with the programs that you use. For example, you can zoom in very closely using the technology you have, right?
Right. And a lot of the programs are actually inclusive of all fields of medicine. So some of them have attachments where, a doctor, with the assistance of a staff on the other end can listen to a heartbeat, take a look in the ears. So some of the equipment's pretty high tech,
So the purpose of this, I mean, we've had the technology in broad strokes for quite some time, but I assume that one of the reasons it's being deployed more is because there are places in Georgia and around the nation where patients don't have access to see a psychiatrist in their office. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Around 2006, I want to say, that the Georgia legislature recognized this as a major deficit, that many Georgians didn't have access to specialty services, psychiatry included.
Sorry to interrupt you, but many? How many? Are we talking about thousands? Hundreds?
hundreds of thousands? Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Essentially the push from the legislator's point of view was that, hey, we want to get everyone within at least an hour's drive of a specialist, which still can be a challenge, an hour for many families. That's really when kind of the ball got rolling statewide, I'd say. And it's gradually built steam, and, they've tried to increase the number of locations. The idea is really to reach, individuals closer to home.
I mean, it's fairly clear what the benefits are of this type of technology, to be able to see your doctor just from your own living room. The immediacy, I'm sure it's cheaper. But what are the downsides? Are there things that you can detect and see when you have someone in your office as opposed to when they're on a computer screen?
Yeah, I'd agree with you. Even though I'm a strong supporter of telemedicine, I'd say it does have limitations to actually being there physically with someone in the office. Depending on the equipment you're using, you might not be able to read those subtle facial cues quite as well as if you're directly in front of the person. You've got a limited view with the camera. So I work with kids a lot, and kids with ADHD sometimes are whipping around the office and sit in front of the camera for me can be a challenge. I've done work with nursing homes in the past, and some folks who aren't native to this technology, didn't grow up with it, it can be a little bit of a challenge for them to use.
And what difference does it make? I mean, there has to be some kind of reaction in your brain, emotional or neurological, to dealing with a computer screen as opposed to dealing with a living, breathing, warm human being.
Yeah. One of the biggest things I've noticed is, really the eye contact. Because, the individual's looking at you on the screen, and your camera placement's usually right above the screen. So, your gazes never quite meet up. That to me is the biggest artificial barrier with it, that, we're just not quite looking at each other.
And yet, I assume, because you are such a supporter of this type of technology, that just being able to see a patient, period, as opposed to the number of people that were going without treatment entirely, that outweighs these cons we're talking about, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you know, there's been a number of studies looking at patient satisfaction, and generally you see that patients are just as satisfied with telemedicine as they are with in-office visits. Now, a lot of that has to do with the add-on convenience factor for them, that they didn't spend 4 hours in the car getting to you.
Does it matter for you what kind of I guess limitations would you want to set on it? Would you want to always have a nurse available who can take vital signs and blood pressure and things like that?
I do feel like, from the doctor's point of view, that's definitely best practice. It's just purely outside of a medical setting on the patient's end. They might call me up when they're on vacation and Florida, and I'm
not licensed
to practice in Florida, so I'm kind of skirting the law there if that happens.
And then also
just kind of the safety and security issues. The medications I prescribe can affect blood pressure, can affect heart rate. I like to have the confidence that information's being gathered by a professional on the other end too.
It's really interesting. Dale Peoples is an associate professor of child adolescent psychiatry at the Medical College at Augusta University. Dale, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.